You are listening to Punk News Podcast, late night edition. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We're recording later at night than usual because everyone has to work around John's schedule because he's the little prince that everyone has to cater to. But this is the late night edition where we're going to be talking about adult topics for your adult ears. So if you're under 18, go to bed. And if you're over 18, strap in there, big boy. Punk News Podcast, episode 564. Here we go.
Ew.
I'm not even playing this song because Hallie's too perfectly underscore. And listen, people, it's Punk News Podcast. You know what we do here. We humiliate each other and listener with pervy voices. But listen, people, I got two. Well, first of all, we're with Hallie Bullet. Hallie Bullet, excellent placement. Well job. You already won the episode. How does it feel you know that you've already won the episode and we're only 1 minute and 6 seconds in? How does that
It feels pretty good because I think that's probably the best I have to offer tonight. I'm a little sleepy, but I'm excited to talk to you guys. And yes, I'm glad I could do something coming out of the gate strong.
And more, do you feel unclean and harassed from that pervy intro?
I think we should make it the new tagline.
Ew.
Ew.
No. The strap in big boy and then the ew.
Well, listen, people, I got a couple of quick things. First thing, last Friday, I saw Chris Gethard, the comedian. Two sets. The first set was Chris Gethard does Beautiful Anonymous, and it was different than I thought it was going to be. If you listen to the excellent Beautiful Anonymous podcast, it's generally Chris interviewing someone, and he doesn't know who they are, and they call in, and often the person has a problem or a crazy life experience or something, and I thought that's what it was going to be. This is in Philadelphia, mind you. But in Philadelphia, just some guy from Kansas called in, and he didn't really have any agenda. Just he and Chris were talking, and I was really amazed at how captivating Chris was able to make it, and also how funny. Basically, the guy was just kind of talking about this and that, and Chris almost made it like a two-man stand-up routine, improv stand-up routine, and the guy didn't even know that it was supposed to be we're just talking, and it's like really, really funny. But not only was Chris funny, Chris made the other guy funny. So it was really interesting and cool to see. Then the next set was, I guess, what you call a standard stand-up comedy set. The first comedian was a guy called Martin Urbano, who I liked a lot. He's what I would call, I guess, kind of a joke machine, which is kind of like my favorite kind of comedian, like Rodney Dangerfield or Mitch Hedberg or Stephen Wright, like just joke, which I love. And what I really like about Martin Urbano is that, like, he had some pretty edgy and pretty dark material, but and I hate to use the word woke, and I'm like, oh man, he's going to get slaughtered in this crowd, which tends to be more woke than maybe your average crowd or whatever. But he's positioning himself in like this area where he's like, I'm one of you guys, so I'm going to make fun of us as well, you know. And he was really I laughed out loud a lot. And he's just a really clever, really good, like, joke, like, bam, joke, which I love. Then Chris comes out. Chris is somewhat of a different kind of comedian. The first half of his set was jokes, but Chris is more of a storyteller and kind of makes points and has bigger themes, kind of like George Carlin or maybe Richard Pryor later on, something like that. I'm not even an expert. I don't really know hardly anything about comedy, but, you know. And anyways, I was really amazed that, like, the second half of Chris's set was almost like him, like, talking about some fundamental truth. And was captivating, and it was funny, but it wasn't just funny. So listen, people, if you have a chance to go see Chris Gethard, either Beautiful Anonymous set or stand-up set or Martin Urbano, go see him. You won't regret it. It's great.
That's awesome. Yeah, Martin is – his stuff is really – edgy is like not – it's like not an edgy enough word, right? Like he really puts himself out – yeah, I would also recommend Martin's – comedy, also Chris's, of course, but I would really recommend Martin's comedy to people because it's really, really out there. And I think he tries pretty brave stuff. And there's times when I'm just watching him on stage and I'm like, I would not say that on stage. He's just like really got like he's got guts and he's trying to do some like, yeah, he's just trying to do something new, which I think is cool to see. Yeah.
Oh, and actually, I think it's probably bad to talk about comedians' jokes. Like, but I'll just do one Martin Urbano. Near the end of his set, like he says, "I'm practicing for doing more Q&As, but I don't want to get surprised, so I wrote out the question for you, and you can just read the card. And he starts handing out cards to the audience, and Martin Urbano is of Mexican descent, or maybe he's half Mexican. I don't know if he's full Mexican or half Mexican, whatever. So anyways, the question is like, Martin, how do you come up with such great jokes, you dirty Mexican? And it's like these people are like awkward, like it's extremely subversive, but it's really good. Also with Chris is when we had Chris on the show, I felt bad. I said, Chris, I don't really like stand-up comedy, which I thought I didn't, but maybe that's only because I haven't seen that much live stand-up comedy, and I've only seen it on TV, because I really like Chris really is a masterful comedian and performer, because he's telling jokes, and the jokes are funny not only because they're funny, but because of the way he does it, which I realize is obvious, but I'm thinking, like, if my friend, you know, Matt did that joke, would that be as funny? And no, it wouldn't be as funny, because of the persona that Chris has created, because of the timing and the texture. He really is a master of the craft, so it's no wonder everybody loves him. So listen, people, go see them both. They're great. Also, speaking of people that are not masters of the craft, still burning with rage and sore eyes from my conflict at Punk Rock Bowling regarding the food truck, I went back to the Punk Rock Bowling Instagram, and I scrolled through it, and because they'll put like, oh, you know, here's Billy G's ice cream, or, you know, here's, you know, Angry Frankie's coffee truck. And I found the coffee truck. And I read the signs on the Instagram post, and I was wrong. There was no post that had the word, like the F word in it or anything like that. So the lady was just saying MF to me for no reason at all. So I don't feel bad about what I said to her. Take that, you know. It just, as Architect of Self-Destruction shows, you can't trust your own memory, because two people remember things completely differently. And while I was fleeing the scene in panic, I was almost certain that I saw the word MF-er on a sign, but I didn't. It wasn't there, you know? So the lady just freaked out and called me an F-er for no reason. Anyway.
But, like, you were doing the thing that a lot of us do, which is when something that sort of defies logic happens to you, your brain immediately starts trying to, like, figure out a reason why it happened, or like justify it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I feel like your brain was like trying to come up with an explanation as to why a person that's supposed to be in customer service is saying the word motherfucker to you. You know?
But now I'm back to square one. Like, why did this lady say MF to me when I said, may I please have a sandwich twice? So I'll never know the, you know, it's like the Bermuda Triangle, or, you know, the Bay Area serial killer. We'll never know. We'll never know. And we're just going to have to live with that. But here's something that we do know about. We do know who owns the world's most expensive record. Of course, as the listeners know, we've been following this doggedly, despite the commenters' hatred of this story. But I love this story. This is one of my favorite stories. Some of my favorite punk news stories ever are the Wu-Tang story, the Woodstock 2018 story, or maybe it was Woodstock 2017, whatever, Woodstock 50. And I'm trying to think, like, these ongoing stories that just get more and more ridiculous. Oh, the story with who was the guy? The guy that was like in the Ataris, but had a massive real estate research scam, where people would pay him like $100, and he would text them, or he would fax them a list of properties in foreclosure, except for he wouldn't send the list, and then so he would just collect $100, and eventually you can find that on Punk News. It's a fascinating story. Anyway.
I don't think we've ever talked about that on the podcast when I've been on. I'm going to have to look this up now.
That's before your time, people, and Hallie, look up at Punk News, do like Ataris and like real estate scam or something like that, and you'll find it. It's one of my favorite stories ever. And the reason it's one of my favorite stories is because it's hilarious, people behaving poorly, but there's no real victims, which is kind of the best kind of story there is. You know, as opposed to young child faces the odds and triumphs despite setbacks, and it's a good positive story. No, John's favorite story is Jackass acts like Jackass and bad things happen. So that's a look inside John's head. Anyway, here's a look inside of John's head, because John loves this story. Anyways, as the listeners know, a number of years ago now, probably about 3 or 4, Wu-Tang Clan said, we've got a new album coming out, but we're only making one copy, and that's it. And we're going to auction off to the highest bidder. And the highest bidder was $2 million. And no one knew who it was. Well, as it turns out, that it was Martin Shkreli, the world's biggest villain at the time, and he was a bad guy. And so, bada bing, bada boom, end of story. Jackass, rich jackass that made money by literally extorting people with AIDS for their life. Literally, that's how he made his money. bought the record. However, he ended up going to jail for securities fraud. So the FBI took the record as part of the judgment, or not judgment, penalties, civil penalties against Martin Shkreli. Then the FBI sold the record again, and everyone's like, well, who knows who has it now? Well, just recently it came to light who actually did buy it from the FBI. And, of course, the record originally sold for $2 million. And as listeners will doubtlessly remember, when it was sold by the FBI, I'm like, well, there's no way anyone's spending $2 million for that again. Like, it'll probably go for like $200,000, $300,000, which is still ridiculous, but still. As others also might know, second most expensive record, Beatles White Album number one, originally held by Ringo. I think that's a $700,000 record. The third most expensive record ever is an Elvis record, and I think that's like $300,000 or $200,000. So it's a big jump. Well, anyways, it turns out that the person that bought the Wu-Tang record from the FBI isn't a person at all. It's, I don't even fully understand what it is, but it is this, the following thing. I'm sighing out of exhaustion and annoyance. Pleaser DAO. Pleaser DAO is a collective that describes itself as a collector of DeFi leaders, early NFT collectors, and digital artists who have built formidable yet benevolent reputation for acquiring culturally significant pieces with a charitable twist. You know, like you get like a drink, it's like, oh, it's a mint julep with a lemon twist, with a charitable twist. And how much do they spend for it? $4 million. They doubled the price. I thought the price would go down. I don't know who in the right mind is spending $4 million on a Wu-Tang record, because who's going to spend $5 million for it? But I guess someone, I mean, NFTs, the vast majority are worthless. Some are still skyrocketing price. And more, what do you think Doge, the Doge NFT is worth?
Like as a whole?
Like if Enmore wants to buy the Doge NFT, and if listeners don't even know, I don't even know what NFT, like, an NFT, a non-fungible token, it's essentially a collector's card, and there's only one. It's not even the copyright to the thing. It is a number on blockchain, and it has an image associated with it. That's all it is. That's literally all it is. And so what do you think that's worth, Enmore, if you wanted to buy it? Did I tell you guys before we recorded? I forget.
I'm trying to remember. Was it 25 million?
Hallie Pullett, what do you think? Over or under 25 mil?
I like honestly don't really even understand what we're talking about. I don't know what Doge NFT even means. This is all beyond me.
The Doge NFT is $27 million. And these guys own it, and they own a whole bunch of other stuff. And what really annoys me, if you go to their website, it's like it looks like it was made on Windows 95. It's like really crappy. And so I don't know. We're in hell. Hallie Bullet, I mean, is it the end times? Really?
It kind of is, but I'm not surprised that the record went up in price, because it's got this whole like FBI. I mean, I just feel like the mystery around this has just like grown and grown, and the fact that it was like confiscated by this douche and then raffled off by the FBI. Like I think this record is now just like reaching like unicorn status. So I'm not surprised that it went up in price.
So you feel as though it's the Mona Lisa of records, in that maybe it is an amazing record or maybe it's not, but you know, Napoleon Bonaparte had it. It was stolen. That all adds to the value, you're saying.
Exactly. Yes. Just its story. It's the adventures that it's been on.
And more, what do you think? You think it was a good investment of Pleaser DAO? Even the name is creepy. Pleaser DAO. What the hell is that? God damn.
Yeah,
I hate the world.
Yeah, soon it'll just be one big porn site, and we'll all be like living in our computers somehow.
Oh, it's like it's Tron but with porn.
Yeah.
Oh man, I can't wait to get my racing bike. That's not what you get to see. Oh.
Bad mental images.
I think Enmore just like created like the best parody ever, like for real.
Like truly.
Tron but with porn. Yes.
I need to write this now, put it in production. I can see it. That's how I make my millions.
Well, see, Em, would you make it a porn, or would you make it a movie that comments on porn?
Ooh.
Because if you want to make a porn, I think it's pretty cheap to make, frankly. I think you need maybe like $500.
Oh, yeah.
Hallie, what if Anne Moore became like a porn baron or whatever? Like that was what she did. All right, this is a PG-13 show. Not making it dirty. Oh, we did say it was after.
You
after,
did
after
promise that. Yeah. You did promise that it was going to be a more risque and porn-centric episode.
That's true. All right, Em, take any way you want. You
know? Yes, I'm surrounded by my barrels of lube, and I'm preparing for the empire to begin. I think the only way that they can, just getting back to the NFT thing, I kind of think they're going to shoot it into space somehow. I think they're going to make space a thing with it. Maybe the physical copy, not the NFT.
One of the commenters, we have a video of Pleaser Dow, and it's like them talking about having the record. And someone says, how does this dork come across as even more punchable than Martin Shkreli? Which I was talking to Adam White, former Punk News editor and also podcast host. And he was basically saying, like, maybe not these dudes, but like these dudes that live in this world are basically like just the worst of the worst. Just like the most like, I don't know how to describe it. Just annoying, gross, mentally and morally corrupt people, you know. I'm not trying to be too hard. I think I just bought a record, but you know. What I was going to say is, I was going to say something along those lines. Oh, what really annoys me, and actually Hallie Bolt and I talked about this briefly in a different context, is if you watch the video, like it's like these dudes that have like millions of dollars, A, to make a like a promotional video that they bought, but also like they have millions of dollars to buy this record, which is not nearly it's the definition of gluttonous because it is literally for nothing. Anyways, they kind of start speaking in Wu-Tang vernacular and stuff, and I'm like, it's kind of racist, I think. I mean, I'm not sure, but it feels kind of racist to me. And if something feels racist, it probably is racist, you know? It's like, we can't wait to get these booty-shaking beats, you know, out on the fleek, you know? I'm like, that's not how you talk. So why are you talking to me like that in regards to Wu-Tang? And I get that Wu-Tang uses slang, but it doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel right, you know?
Yeah.
All of this doesn't feel right, you know? 2021 doesn't feel right, you know? But here's something that does feel right, people. This feels so good. Crazy in the Brains have released a cover of Iggy Pop and the Teddy Bears song, I'm a Punk Rocker, or just Punk Rocker. They released a video. The video is off their new 2-CD compilation, which everyone should get. It's called Bayonne Trash, and it's a compilation of pretty much every single thing they've ever done, including their exclusive tracks, the Punk News mixtapes, except for their latest 7-inch. But the video, I don't know if you guys want me to go first, because I thought the video was unfathomably excellent, and it's probably the best video I've seen this year. Maybe I'm biased. I don't know if you guys want me to kick it off, or you guys want to kick it off.
No, go on.
Yeah. So, A, this video is by Shibby Pictures. I don't know the guy's name. He's done a bunch of Crazy in the Brains videos, and a lot of the kudos definitely has to go to him. A lot of the kudos has to go to the band, because they took kind of this upbeat electronic song and kind of made it like this almost sad, morose type song, but also at the end it sort of has defiance, and Chris, being Chris, the singer of Crazy in the Brains, gives it an extra third verse at the end that is his own words. The video itself is ambiguous and extremely artistic, and I absolutely love it. It's I think it's Jersey City. Jersey City's covered in snow, and Chris is walking down the street, and he's bloodied, and he's beat up, and there's two Furies behind him, and the Furies keep beating him, but he doesn't fight back. He just keeps walking forward, so it's unclear as to why he's accepting the abuse and why he's not doing anything about it. Then, meanwhile, that there's a 80s black Corvette with a guy in like a balaclava speeding down the street, and kind of like a, you know, a bank robber or a top secret guy or an FBI guy, or it's like who is this, you know, dark ops kind of guy? We don't know why he's coming. You know, and so anyways, Chris is walking down the street, and we've got this kind of this sad but almost positive song in the background, and the two Furies are beating Chris. Then one of the Furies takes a gun and puts it on his head, and then weirdly the other Fury pulls her away from Chris. They start arguing. The Corvette speeds up, and it turns out that it's Brett from Crazy in the Brains. Chris hops in, and then as they kind of speed away, Chris kind of like has a defiant cheer of resilience. And meanwhile, we also see another black Corvette, which is the same black Corvette, which is Ernest. and Jeff of Crazy in the Brains. And I just think this video, I don't know if it has one exact meaning. I had a couple of interpretations, which I could throw past you guys, and I might even do an article about it. But I just think it's wonderfully ambiguous, wonderfully creative, and wonderfully artistic. And I think the song and the imagery works together so well. And this is, without question, one of my favorite videos of the year, without question.
Yeah, this is like exactly what I want from a cover, first of all, where it's like, it's to me, whatever, I've probably annoyed people on the podcast by reiterating that I really don't like when people do a cover and they just kind of play the song exactly the way it was in the original, because especially if the original was amazing, I'm just like, well, I didn't need your like kind of like second rate version of the original. I really do like, I'm not saying that you have to turn the song like inside out, but I really, really like covers where the band puts their own stamp on the song. And this song is so awesome. I've always liked this song. And to just hear it like, to hear it, yeah, like stripped down a little bit, it's just like really accentuates how it's just a strong composition. It's just a good, it's just a good song in any form. And I'm with you, John. I like loved this video. It like really, really resonated with me. It actually reminded me a little bit, not in a way that I thought it was like a knockoff, but it reminded me a little bit of, wasn't it the Laura Jane Grace video that we talked about where
with the skeleton?
There's like, yeah, where there's like the skeleton just kind of like pursuing, like, yeah, it reminded me a bit of that. But, yeah, John, I'd be interested to know what you thought of like, if the video, what the meaning of the video is. I mean, I think, you know, this main character, Chris, is like, you know, really tormented and pained by something. And he's literally, you know, rescued by his bandmates. So just as someone that's played music and someone that feels that playing in a band and writing music has definitely saved my life a couple of times, just in terms of giving you a place to go that's not your sadness or your anger, or it gives you a place to put it, or, you know, I definitely just saw it as, you know, being literally rescued by your music and your band and the music that you all make together. I don't know. Yeah. Em, what did you think? And then John, I want to hear what your theories were.
I thought the cover was really good, and I really liked the video. They matched up really, really well. And I got a lot out of it too, like you know, like when he's saying like, I'm a punk rocker, yes I am, it's like, it's a declaration of identity, and it's like, I'm still here, I've been beat up, I'm still here, I'm pulling myself along, I have my band members, we're going to emerge victorious, we're moving forward, we will never stop moving forward. So that was really good. And the lead singer, Chris, like, he looks so cool, just a complete aside, just the jacket and everything, like, the aesthetics are really good. So, yeah. John, what were your takes?
Well, I had two. I watched this video a bunch of times. I thought about it. Is, so the two Furies are, like, beating on him, but he's not running away. And so are they guilt? Are they sadness? Are they something like that? But he's not running away. He's kind of just accepting it. So, you know, guilt or sadness can be comforting, you know, just because it's there. So, you know, maybe that's what the two Furies are. And then when one of the Furies goes to kill him, the other one pushes the other one away. And so it's like, you know, guilt needs you as much as you might need it in the context of this song. And then when he finally does decide to get in the car and leave him behind, they're cursing him out, even though they were just trying to kill him and beat him 5 seconds ago for leaving him, you know. So maybe it is about, you know, overcoming guilt or sadness or anything like that. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it, though, which I thought, and I don't even think there is one exact thing, is, you know, we see that the one Fury pulls out the gun, and then it can't be ignored that he almost immediately gets in a black car driven by someone in black clothes. Is it a story of overcoming guilt, or is he dead? And it's, you know, it's the Grim Reaper driving him away, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think it's one exact meeting. I just think it's open-ended art, which is a wonderful form of art, you know? I think it's an amazing video.
Yeah.
It's so cool. Can read so much into it.
That's the best art, indeed. Here's something else you can read a whole bunch into. And deep art. So anyway, everyone knows Raymond Pettibon. He did a bunch of Black Flag album covers, a bunch of Black Flag flyers, a bunch of Minutemen covers, a couple of Sonic Youth covers. He did Offs covers. Raymond Pettibon, probably the most famous punk rock artist, and I don't mean this dismissively. He's not even really a punk rock artist. He's an artist that happened to be involved in the punk scene early on, but now does, you know, extremely collectible art, as I recently learned. I mean, for years and years and years, a Raymond Pettibon drawing was $15,000, $20,000, $50,000. In the current economy, his art has shot up to $500,000, $700,000, $1 million for a Pettibon work. And what's interesting, and this is widely reported, is if you go to Raymond Pettibon's studio, like, he'll do a painting in like a day or a couple of days or a drawing. You know, it's they're not massively time-consuming things for him. And he has actually a lot of themes that he revisits over and over, which is cool. Waves is a big one. Wieners is another one. Guns is another. He has a lot of themes that Gumby's another one. I'm trying to think of some of his other recurring themes. He's got about 7 or 8 recurring themes that are in a lot of his work. He's got a shouting man that is in a lot of his work. Anyways, and what's interesting to me is he'll do like a wave one, and it's like not even that different than his other wave ones. Then it'll go for like $300,000. I guess it's just the name. And not that Pettibon – I mean, listen, Pettibon is an amazing artist. And if you ask me, he deserves every cent that he has that he's gotten. The only drawback, as Jesse Michaels discussed, is it's great that Raymond Pettibon is getting all this crazy money, and it's great that Banksy is getting all this crazy – but you know what? There's other artists that are as good or almost as good that make like nothing. So it'd be nice if it was evened out a little bit. You know what I mean? But anyways, mm-hmm. I don't fault Raymond Pettibon for that. He's the tops. I mean, it really is. Anyways, Raymond Pettibon had a protege, a guy called Christian Rosa, and he was kind of an up-and-coming art guy in himself. Last year the year before, he had a painting sell for like $60,000 or $70,000. But however, after that, I guess the buzz died down and he sold some stuff for like $10,000 or $15,000, not the crazy prices that he was getting. And so anyways, sometime last year, there was 4 Raymond Pettibons on the market and people bought them, and they bought them in the terms of hundreds of thousands of dollars each. But they look kind of weird. The waves, the color was kind of wrong. And also where Pettibon often puts in words, it was like erased and it looked like words were put in there. And also the signature was much more specific than Pettibon usually just like whips out a signature. And it's in his unique font, but they're not identical to each other. But with these 4, the signature was almost identical. Why? Well, somebody tipped it off that it turns out this guy, Christian Woza, probably allegedly took 4 unfinished Pettibon pieces from his studio, and Pettibon didn't know they were missing because he literally has hundreds of things all over his floor and he stepped on them, and this guy finished them himself and then sold them as Pettibon originals for a lot of money. Once the tip was off, Pettibon learned of it, and then he alerted the authorities. The authorities alerted the FBI, and the FBI started an inquisition. And it turned out the FBI did determine that they believe that this guy did, I guess, forge the finishing of 4 pictures and sold them as fully Pettibon originals. They filed charges against him, and he fled the country. And now no one knows where he is. However, he's facing 1 count of wire fraud, conspiracy, 1 count of wire fraud, and 1 count of aggravated identity theft. So he's looking at a maximum of 22. He could get at least 22 years, maybe more, but he could also get a lot less than that if they ever catch him. But he's got a Brazilian citizenship. He's got an Austrian citizenship, so we might never see him again. I just find it fascinating. Again, the commentators really didn't care on Facebook. They really, really didn't care. But we've got massive movie-style art theft, like kind of like Ocean 15 or whatever, emanating from the punk rock world. I just find this fascinating. I don't know if there's any moral from here. Well, the moral is, I mean, honestly, like, there's actually two morals here. First, the one moral is, it's great that Raymond Pettibon's getting rich. I'm all for that. But it would be nice if Jesse Michaels got some of that too, because, you know, Jesse Michaels is an amazing artist, and many other artists as well. The second moral of the story is, You know what? I mean, it really is scary how some people just have too much money. And it's not, you know, people spending $4 million on a Wu-Tang record. That's not even that good. People spending $500,000 on a Raymond Pettibon drawing, which are amazing. But is it $500,000 amazing? You know, so it is kind of troublesome that in an age where the middle class is shrinking and, you know, people can't even buy houses, certain people are spending $4 million on a record, you know, $500,000 on a drawing that took Pettibon 3 hours to do, you know, $1,000 on a single steak at a shitty steakhouse in London, you know. So I don't know. Hallie Bullitt, you got any bigger visions here or any comments?
No, I mean, I think it's crazy that this guy just has like disappeared. And like, is it worth it? You know, like, why would you, especially you're an artist and this guy's in his 40s. It's not like he's like a kid. I mean, I don't know exactly what. Yeah, I mean, this was all happening somewhat recently, right? When did he start selling these? Just to say, this is not a kid. This is like a grown ass man. Who's like an artist and like, I mean, I don't understand. Money's great. We all want more money, but like now he's had to basically just like leave his life behind and like evaporate as a human being so that he doesn't spend 20 years in prison for this shit. It just seems so dumb. It just seems so like completely and totally dumb to me.
Well, Hallie Bullitt, in my experience, when people need a lot of money and disappear and need a lot of money quickly, there are often maybe just a couple reasons for that, you know. I will say, you point out, it is ironic that, you know what, even though he was, quote, only getting $15,000 to $20,000 for a painting, 99.3% of artists would kill to get $10,000 for a painting. You know what I mean? Yeah. Emmor, do you know where he's at? Did you help him? Or, like, what's the deal? Oh, and the funny part of the thing is after the indictment, this guy is really stupid in that, like, after the indictment, he emailed his co-conspirator saying, the jig is up. Like, wouldn't you do that on the phone or in person, not email?
No. Why?
So, Emmor, where he's at? Actually, Emmor, if you know where he's at, you let Hallie and I know. We'll figure out what the bound is, and we'll go get it, and we'll split it three ways.
Oh, wait. Okay. I've looked a little bit more into it. I've gotten a little bit more info. Okay, so it says, Mr. Rosa himself was once a rising art world star. The market for his work peaked in the fall of 2014 when one of his paintings sold at Christie's in New York for $209,000. But a year later, a similar work by him sold at Sotheby's for $30,000. So it seems that this guy felt that his career was in the shitter, which maybe it was.
I know, man.
That was why he turned to a life of crime.
$30,000 for a painting seems all right to me. You know what I mean?
Like, right, but that was a year later, and that was in 2015. So who knows, by 2019, when he started with all this, like, scallywagging, who knows, like, what his work was worth. I'm not justifying. I'm just saying it explains a little bit of it to me.
So, Em, do you agree with Howie that he should have done this and made the right move the entire way? And that if you look at his art is actually pretty crappy. There's a picture of him standing in front of, like he does, like it's basically abstract art, which is cool, but it's like, I don't see anything really special about this. Of course, a lot of art, you're like, why is that special? And you see something that no one cares about. You're like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen, you know? But like, if you look at his art, it's just like a scribble. You know, it's like scribbles. It's like,
I know, but that's like art. I mean, you sound like, that's such a stereotype, John. Yeah. Like the person that's like standing in the Museum of Modern Art being like, I could have done that. Like it's art. It's special because he made it and people think it's cool. And people that know about art think it's cool. I mean, I'm not dismissing your opinion. All of our opinions are, I think all people are equal and our opinions have equal weight, but, I don't know. Like also like we're not art. Like, are you an art collector?
Yes.
You are?
Sure. Over the past.
Are you a modern art collector?
Over the past 3 years, I have decided to collect art by musicians that I like. So I would say I have a collection of original art. That being said, I don't know anything about art really.
Yeah, I see. I don't either. That's why it's like I think I'm looking at the same picture that you're looking at of him standing in front of his. No, I think it looks cool. I mean, I'm not going to hang it in my house, but again, I'm not a modern art like collector. That's not my thing. I'm like you. I probably would be more likely to like buy art that was connected to like music that I liked or dance that I liked or some other, you know. Yeah.
If you could have a Petty Bon or his, what would you take? Same price.
Oh, I'd definitely take the Petty Bon.
How about his?
Petty Bon? Petty Bon.
Is it Petty Bone or Petty Bon?
I think, well, because he took it like he it's meant to be French, right? It's like petit, right? Didn't he mash two French words together? Petit Bon.
I don't know. Actually,
Petit Bon. Petit Bon, if you were really being going to be French about it.
You bring up an there's an interview where he says his dad used to call him Pettibone, like when he was little. And so that's where he got the name from. So, but maybe his dad was mashing up the French word or something. I don't know anything about French. I don't know anything about NFTs. I don't know anything about French. I don't know anything about modern art. All I know is I know I likes what I likes and I don't like what I don't like. And I don't like this, but I like Pettibone.
We're just a bunch of ignoramuses talking into microphones.
Art, who needs it? Here's something everyone does need. Gang of Four is going on tour, and they're playing all things from before 1984. Gang of course, quite sadly, Andy Gill, Gang of Four's original guitarist, died, I think it was last year. And for a while, he was the only original member in Gang of Four, but now that he's passed away, two other original members of Gang of Four are going on tour. That's singer John King and drummer Hugo Burnham. Original bassist Dave Allen is not going on tour due to personal issues, but they're still cool with him, they say. Sarah Lee, who was in Gang of Four from 1980 to 1984, she's going to be on bass. And new fellow David Pejo will be on guitar. And honestly, I've never seen Gang of Four. I never saw Andy Gill in Gang of Four. I love the first Gang of Four album. I am definitely going to this. And more. Would you go see Gang of Four? For sure?
Yeah.
And learn about their lore on tour? And maybe see him some more, of course. I mean, you wouldn't be sore if you saw them on tour.
You're so ridiculous.
I'm trying to come up with rhymes and I can't think of anything.
For sure.
Oh, no. Yeah. They're playing the Horseshoe in Toronto. So I know where that is, but now I can't picture it. Things are going well. okay. But anyway,
you can Google it between now and when the concert happens. Don't worry, you'll be able to find the venue.
But it would be really cool to see them. I go.
The Horseshoe was on March 4.
Yeah. So that would be cool. Oh my God, it's a rhyme. Shit, I should have written that down, and then it would have. missed opportunities. I would go see them. I think they put on a great show, and I want to see how expensive tickets are, and hopefully go. Hallie, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, I would. I think this is going to be cool. I also just think I'd like to see Sarah Lee play on bass. I think she's cool. She's had an incredibly cool career as just post her stint with Gang of Four. She's a super accomplished session and touring bassist. So I think it's exciting that she's playing with them. And I don't know. I think it'll be good. I guess I just am wondering, John, do you know when was the last time, that John King and Hugo Burnham were playing together or playing shows? Do we know, is this going to be one of these satisfying experiences where I'm I got to see Gang of Four? Is it going to be one of these depressing experiences where I'm I should have just if I couldn't see him in their prime, I should have just left well enough alone?
I am going to guess that they are going to kick ass because there's a lot riding on it. I don't think it's going to be a Vibrators type thing or a Sham 69 thing where no one's in the band. John King hasn't been in the band since 2010, and Hugo hasn't been in the band since 2005, rather. Mm-hmm. So I think it's probably going to be $35, and I say it's worth the risk. I'm excited to see it. I actually made the decision not to go when it was just Andy Gill, because I'm like, oh, it's just Andy Gill. But apparently, like, Andy Gill was, like, really cool a lot, so maybe I should have went. But now I'm going, and I'm going to get to hear the first album and more, which I love. Nice. From the floor. Not in the seats. And anyways, let's play a song. Who's got a song? Somebody play a song.
And play a song.
All right. So, this is from Vancouver-based hardcore punk band Punitive Damage. It's off their 3-song EP called Strike Back, and this is Legacy. So this is Legacy by Punitive Damage.
And that was Punitive Damage. Great name. Yet an excellent name, following in the grand tradition of legal names for punk, for hardcore punk bands, such as Judge, and such as Motion to Dismiss, and such as Request for Adjudication, and such as Demurrer, and such as Objection, and such. No, I'm kidding.
What is happening?
There's two bands with legal names, Punitive Damage and Judge. So there you go. Anyways, Emmore, tell us about No Bro and their new video.
Yeah, okay. So we talked about their new song a couple weeks ago, I think, now, call, and it's Better Each Day, and it's a great song. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to it right now. But yeah, so I had theories about what the video was going to be, and I was wrong in all of them, because they put out Don't Die last year, a video for Don't Die last year, and it was animated, and it looked really, really cool. So I thought, oh, well, they're going to continue that. They're going to do this. They're going to make another animated video, and then I thought, oh, well, maybe they're going to do like a dance video kind of thing with it, because like it's super energetic and everything. No. So like it starts and all of the members of the band, like they're running, and some have like paint and paint rollers or brooms, and I think one has a baseball bat and like all this kind of stuff. So they come to like this obelisk thing and they tear it down, and then they're carrying it like portage style, and they're running with it, and they set it up in this like abandoned park area. Like it might have been a parking lot or something at some point. Like there's a lot of concrete and the grass is kind of growing up over the concrete. So like they set it up and they get it like erect, and they're playing around it. I'm continuing the theme. And then they're playing around and they're playing their song, and there's lightning and like sparks that are, they're kind of going up the statue, and then they kind of explode out the top, and it kind of looks like they're also like kind of, the lightning's being attracted to it, so it's hitting it. So it looks really cool. And I thought the video was good. I thought it matched the song. Again, I thought it was going to be a bit different, but it's creative. And, you know, like, that makes it exciting. Like, they're not falling into, like, a rut or whatever. It's not like, oh, they did an animated video in the past, I'm going to expect another animated video. They're like, no, we're going to do something else. And I thought it was good. I thought it fit well. What did you guys think of the No Bro video?
Yeah, John, were you into this?
Yeah, I thought it was real cool. Again, as with the Crazy in the Brains video, I liked how it was somewhat ambiguous. I maybe I'm reading too much into it, but, of course, famously, stelas and obelisks are famously phallic symbols, and the band is called No Bro, and they chop down a phallic symbol, if that's what it is. Repin, and I thought they were going to like throw it in the water because they're like carrying it, but then they re-erect it and it starts shooting energy out of the tip. So I have no idea what to make of it, and I like that's what I make out of it. I think the song's fantastic. I think this band is very exciting. And I like how the message is. I don't know what the message is, and I like that. Hallie, what did you think of the fact that the band looks like they just stepped out of MC5 circa 1967?
I was so into it. And you guys, I'm sorry, but is there anything more exciting than like girls or women just fucking running? Like, it's so good. It's like why like that movie Run Lola Run was like so huge when it came out. Like, it's just so exciting to watch a person in general, but like there is something particularly awesome about a woman just running, because it's just like all legs and hair and just like just like so fucking good. I thought this video was so exciting. I have to say, I love how Canadian it is that you said that they were portaging this obelisk. Like, I feel like that's such like a Canuck. Like,
that was the only way I could think to describe it, because I didn't know what else to. Jesus. Yeah.
Love it. Yes, they are in fact portage this obelisk. I loved this video. I thought it was just like super fun, like exciting and fun and funny, and yeah, a lot of the things that I want a music video to be.
I particularly enjoy the part where the one woman is running down the street and some guy's got a baseball bat and she grabs it and then flicks him off as she runs away. Pretty funny. Yet again, people behaving badly or perhaps behaving goodly. Here's another story about people behaving badly or goodly. This was a hot debate in the old man punk circles. Nowhere else cared except for the old man punk circles, where this was a big battle. You know, I've made a specific point on the Punk News podcast and the Punk News to talk about the new bands, the up-and-coming bands, the bands that are taking punk in a new direction, because we got to cover that, because that is the next wave of punk. But also, we got to cover the old dudes, you know? So I'm not saying I'm dismissing. Listen, the UK Subs are an amazing band, and anytime UK Subs do anything, we've got to report on it, because UK Subs rock. But they had a little bit of a problem this past week. So anyways, as the listeners might know, Conservative MP Sir David Arness, I don't even know what MP means over in England. MP. What does that mean in England?
Member of Parliament.
I feel stupid. Anyways, no. Sir David Arness, a member of Parliament, was quite sadly ambushed in attack and stabbed to death with a knife. And the English police, are looking into it, and they're treating it as a terrorist attack. I mean, that was pretty crazy. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, how, that's like if a senator got like ambushed and knifed to death. That's pretty crazy.
It's, you know? Totally crazy. Yeah.
And so anyways, and he was, he's conservative. So in America, he'd be what's called right wing. And so on social media, the drummer who's been with the band for about 16 years named Jamie Oliver did a post either making fun of it or making light of it. Basically kind of saying, well, I don't know what he said, but making light of the situation, the post was taken down. Following that, the UK Subs, to the surprise of some people and to the consternation of some of the old punks, removed him from the band. And they actually issued three statements. The first statement was kind of flat, and I'm not going to read the whole thing each time, but basically the first statement says, following a social media post by Subs drummer Jamie Oliver on Friday the 15th, all four members of the band, Charlie, Alvin, Steve, and Jamie, had discussions together on Sunday, and it has been decided that after these conversations that Jamie will leave the band with immediate effect. We're going to continue on tour, blah, blah, blah. And then people got really mad. They were like, how dare you kick him out of the band? You know, it's punk rock. That guy's conservative. You know, you got nothing to be apologized for. And then Alvin said, Alvin of the band, Alvin Gibbs, he did another post. Basically, we all discussed it, and Jamie's cool with it. We've really appreciated it, but we just can't have him in the band anymore. Then people kept freaking out. And so then Gibbs did another statement that basically said, listen, we got threats after this was posted. Charlie, 77 or 78, we can't be having risks in the band, these kind of risks in the band. No one, we don't want anybody to get hurt, and that's why we got to let him go, you know. And so a lot of the old punks were like, you know, cancel culture. And I'm not sure that I disagree, but then also on the other hand, you know, I think it's bad mojo to talk bad about anybody after they die, except for like maybe like, you know, well, even if it's like a really bad person, like Osama bin Laden or child rapist, I still wouldn't like make fun of it. I would just say, well, it's sad that's the way things went, and it's sad that person had to exist, but – that's that, you know. But on the other hand, there is the question of safety. I mean, Charlie Harper's the man, but the dude's 77, and we need to protect Charlie Harper at all costs. So if that is the real issue, yeah. that there's a threat, I'm backing Charlie Harper. If that isn't really the thing, if that isn't really the issue, and the issue was it's a tasteless joke or whatever, I mean, yeah, it's a tasteless joke. I wouldn't have made it. I think it's a bad thing. But I don't want to live in the world where if you have one misstep, you get destroyed or knocked out, a la NoFX. I think that was way too severe. And so you can just, you know, sometimes you screw up. Everybody screws up. Any listener out there, have you ever screwed up in your entire life? And if the answer is no, then you're psychotic and you definitely have, you don't know it. Everybody screws up here and there. I think it's tasteless. I think it's bad. I don't think it's the end of the world. So if that's the issue, he's getting kicked out, I say bad call. But if it really is safety, then I say, listen, we got to protect Charlie. That's A-okay with me. Hallie Bullitt, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this was like with all the different statements they released, it was like a little bit of a moving target to figure out what was going on. I mean, yes, certainly if they're getting threats. Also, did either of you, like, do you know what the joke actually was? I feel like nobody knows what he, like, everyone's reacting to what the tweet was, but I don't feel like anyone knows what the actual tweet said.
I think it was a meme. I have not seen it. I tried to, no one can find out what it was.
No one can find it, right?
I think it was a meme, frankly, you know.
Oh, okay. Oh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it's not cool. Like a guy got stabbed, Jeff. It's not cool to make jokes about it. But, you know, I guess it would, I don't really know what my opinion is if I don't really know what he said. You know, but I would say in general, I kind of agree with you, John. I don't know that I want to live in a world where people don't get to continue in their careers or to make art because of one mistake. But I also think it just kind of depends like how bad a mistake it was. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of hard for me to weigh in without knowing what the guy said. And certainly if it is if it's just an issue of like, you know, these guys just wanting to go on tour without it being a drama and without their tour being defined by this incident, then I think they have every right to just say, we just want to get a new drummer and just go on tour and have it be fun. We don't want this like drama, like dogging us, you know, just like following us the whole time. I don't know. I think that's fair. I don't know. I'd see this band live. I think it'd be cool.
I have seen UK Subs and it's great. It's everything you want it to be. It is the finest of the finest English street punk. It's great.
Yeah,
great.
Totally. Nice. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think about this mess?
It sounds like, well, first I would like to know what he said or what he shared or whatever he put out. Cause that would really clear a lot of things up in one way. Cause you know, all your picture or all I'm imagining anyway is just like the worst possible thing. Right. You know, and I'm sure that wasn't the case, but again, who knows? Like it's not in good taste at all to make fun of somebody who just, was murdered like that's never a good thing. But it really sounds like they fired him or let him go because of safety, and I don't think that the band's at fault for that. Like, I think, again, like, Charlie Harper is in his late 70s. In the second statement, they said, like, due to financial issues, they can't afford, like, bodyguards. They can't afford really proper protection. So I think removing any outside or that doesn't sound right. Protecting yourself as best you can. Like if people were saying like, oh, if Oliver's in the band, you know, we're going to hurt him and then we're going to hurt the rest of the band and we're going to hurt the people who are at the show. That's not good. You don't want to risk that environment in any way, shape or form, especially now. So I think they did the right thing in this case, because I feel like it's more of a matter of safety rather than just, oh, he made a mistake, we're going to can him for the mistake. I think it's a reaction to the mistake. And like, I could see maybe, like in a year or two, like the band and him getting back together and maybe playing shows and, you know, doing stuff like that. It's just not the right time.
This guy's got terrible luck. Do you guys know what band he was the session drummer for about 13 years?
Mm-mm. No. What?
Lost Prophets.
No.
Oof.
Oh, man, no.
Man. No. Anyways, let's close it out with one happy story. Peter Hook's going back on tour, and he's doing a Joy Division set. As the listeners probably know, Peter Hook was the bassist for Joy Division, and he was the bassist for New Order until he was quit or fired from the band. And the Peter Hook and Bernard Sumner. They hate each other real bad. And so basically Peter Hook said, well, New Order sucks these days, so I'm going to out New Order at New Order. And he decided to go on tour where he said first he did an all Joy Division set. Then he did the first two Joy Division albums live. Then he did the first two New Order albums live, then the third and fourth, and then fifth and sixth. So basically he's done the entire good output of Joy Order and New Order live. He's done it all. And so he's at the end of the course. So what is there to do? It looks like he's basically starting it back up, and he's doing Joy Division of Celebration, where they're going to be playing Unknown Pleasure and Closer in full, which isn't the entire Joy Division discography, but it's close. And he's also going to do a third New Order set opening the show. I've seen Peter Hook live now five times, and it is really great. The Joy Division set is awesome. And the New Order set is really cool too, because New Order live is kind of like light now. It's like, how does it feel? Blah, blah. Where Peter Hook kind of like adds a real womp and power back into the band. And that's Peter Hook's attack against New Order, is they play stuff too light and there's no punk rock left in it. I'm going to bring the punk rock back into it. And I don't know who's right. Well, actually, I saw in the battle I side on Peter Hook, although if you read his book, he is fairly honest. And he was definitely a dick sometimes. But also, according to him, the other New Order guys were dicks as well. So who really knows? Maybe everybody's a dick. Maybe everybody's cool. Anyways, the point being is, the criticism that Peter Hook has come under, it's like, well, Peter Hook, why are you doing Joy Division? Because you didn't sing in Joy Division, so why are you singing Joy Division tracks now? And why are you doing just old stuff where at least New Order does some new stuff? I've got opinions on this, but the question is, now that he's done the entire good discography, he's just starting over again. So is that the right move or the wrong move? Hallie Bullet.
Yeah, no, I think this is cool. I think it's going to be great. I mean, I don't know. Like, why? I mean, I will disagree. Like, I saw New Order at Riot Fest a few years ago, and I wanted to, like, drop on the ground. I was so happy. I thought it was, like, fucking fantastic. So, but I don't know. Yeah, like, why? He's a co-founder of the band. Why shouldn't he? You know, especially I feel like, you know, Joy Division has had like a cultural, like there's been a recognition of the, just how influential Joy Division was, you know, within the last, you know, 8, 10 years, maybe. Right. I feel like the people have just been talking about Joy Division more, and like, why not tour and play these songs? People want to hear them. I think it'll be cool. No. Right? I don't know. Em, what do you think?
I'm happy this is happening, because I would love to see this, and I haven't had the opportunity to see this. So I'm all for him doing this. So, like, everyone can kind of get a chance. There's two Toronto dates, the August 12th, or 11th and 12th, at the Danforth. So I want to try to get one of the shows, because Joy Division was it was a big part of my musical history, I guess. And just to see them live would be beyond amazing. Or see those songs perform live would be beyond amazing. And, you know, like, I think it's nice because he's keeping, like, Ian Curtis's memory alive in some way. And, you know, I think it's just, it's good. It's a good thing. John, what do you think?
It's awesome. I can never get behind the argument that, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, it's not the real bit. Yeah, no one thinks it's going to be Ian Curtis up there. Everyone's like, it's Peter Hook doing.
Yeah, like, what are our options here?
but then people go see a Joy Division cover band. It's like, well, mm-hmm. I'd rather see the guy that was in Joy Division doing Joy Division than the Joy Division cover band. It's cool. It's live. I actually really love how he punks stuff up. And if this is what keeps the music playing live and this is what keeps Peter Hook getting paid, if it was bad, I would have a different opinion. But it's not bad. It's excellent. So I'm all for it. So, yes, yeah. Peter Hook, three thumbs up. Oh, go ahead.
My only choice is to see this at Terminal 5, which is, like, not one of my favorite venues in the city. So that's, like, a little bit of a bummer. But I don't know. Like, what venue are they doing in Philly, John?
Is it Underground Arts or Union Transfer? Let me look. In Philadelphia, it is Union Transfer.
Is that a good place to see a show? I've never seen a show there.
Excellent. It is. Sadly, the famed Philly venue, Trocadero, has been shut down due to real estate developers being total dickbags. And also, honestly, also in part, Union Transfer kind of beat Trocadero at, like, kind of beat. If the listeners know, Trocadero is a very famous venue. It's not there anymore. It's a famous – now it's a massage parlor and casino and sushi restaurant or something. The Trocadero, the building itself was like 200 years old. It used to be like a burlesque house, and then it was like an opera house – no, an opera house and a burlesque house. And it was this beautiful old building with a high ceiling, and it was a wonderful place to see shows. The drawback at the time and through its clothing was, especially late in the 2000s and 2010s, the word on the street was that it was horribly mismanaged, that just, you know, its downfall was its own self. What also sort of accelerated that was Union Transfer was built, which is run by R5 Productions. And Union Transfer is another excellent venue. And frankly, I just think R5 was better at booking shows. I don't think it's a question of the venue. I just think R5 is really good at getting cool acts. And so Union Transfer kind of replaced Trocadero, which accelerated the decline, and eventually Trocadero shut down. So Union Transfer is the new Trocadero. Union Transfer, great sound, great venue, and I recommend it.
Awesome. Maybe I'll come down to Philly.
Well, there you have it. Hallie Bullet, let's play a song and we'll send them on out.
Oh, this is so random. I don't know. I just I talked like a few months ago, probably. There was like a comp that Sam Barrett was excited about, and we talked about the fact that there was this, they had gotten this like Iron Sheik song for the comp, and it's from like a split that they did with Toys That Kill. I don't know. Iron Sheik is like a really super popular band. It's not like this is like a, I'm not giving you guys like the underground information here, but I just have been listening to this song a lot lately, like pretty much ever since Sam and I talked about it on the podcast. I've just like been listening to it a lot. So what a good song. This is The Old Man of Crete by Iron Sheik.
And that was Iron Sheik. And more. Any last words for the listeners for this week?
Keep an eye out for my space porn movie. It will be soon. And it'll be like Scream 2. So it'll comment on it. And it'll have a real meta movie playing in the background.
Hallie, but any way to follow up on that statement?
No, I'm not even trying.
See me driving down the street. I'm bored with looking good. I got both hands on the wheel. The cops are coming. I'm listening to the music with no fear. You can hear it too if you're sincere.
Whatever, whatever. He tattooed my name on his skin. Now I'll be there forever.